This is Radio Free America, the talk show for intelligent Americans, brought to you by the American Free Press. And now, here's your host, Tom Valentine.
Ah, there you go. That's better. Welcome, everybody. This is Radio Free America. And before I get to my guest, no, I am not stopping the Sunday night broadcast. Radio Free America on Sunday night from 9 to 11 Eastern, as we're doing right now, will continue. Who knows? This is my 14th year. When I reach the anniversary date, it'll be number 14 coming up here in a few months. So I'm in my finishing up my 13th year. How's that? I'm going to count like Chinese. I read a magazine. I read lots of magazines. But other than the American Free Press and Acres USA, my favorite is a thing called Backwoods Home. Now, Backwoods Home magazine has been going on for a long, long time. And it's a magazine for people who want to get out and live in the country and be self-sufficient. It's a magazine for rugged individuals. Maybe that's what I like it, because I really believe that the individual is the key, and that individual responsibility is the key to everything. And this magazine is a magazine that plays to the individual and how to make your way out in the boondocks. No electricity, no nothing. They'll tell you how to do it. They have a senior editor there by the name of John Silvera. And he has written a series that has turned out to be the most popular series that the Backwoods Home magazine ever published. And I can understand why. I read every bit of them. I read them all. And John has a unique, John has a very interesting literary style in which all of his columns, all of his editorial essays, if you will, feature Dave Duffy, the owner of Backwoods Home, the publisher of Backwoods Home magazine, and a friend of theirs by the name of O.E. MacDougall. And Mac is the philosopher of the three, and he's the one that tells us. And it is this unique style, this relaxed style that John Silvera uses that allows him to come up with an eight-part series, if you will, on becoming American dictatorship. And he is able to do this, to deal with a topic like this, without getting shrill, as so many of us do. You know, I get all excited about the way that things are going to hell in a handbasket here. And I'm sure John does too, but in the way he presents it, it is fun reading. And so I have invited him to share out a couple of hours with us. And on his series, The Coming American Dictatorship, and also, John Silvera, I want to welcome you to Radio Free America, but before you start talking, you also wrote an editorial, Why I Am Not Going to Vote for a Law and Order President. You also wrote a thing on presidential IQs, and the World Trade Center attack, was this predictable? So welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Now, John, where do we start here? Why wouldn't you vote for a law and order president?
Oh, I got to remember why I wrote that. I wrote it about Bush. Of course, I also said I wasn't going to vote for Gore either. But it was, I feel as though I have a problem with the death penalty.
Oh, okay.
And it is not death penalty being invoked when it's deserved. It's when it's being invoked when so many things are uncertain. Although I didn't mention this, I don't believe I mentioned this in the column. One of the real things is we have a government that selects juries, that wholesale throws people off the juries who do not go along with the government line. We have we don't have a system of justice. We hope to get justice out of our system. But what we have is we have prosecutors, we have policemen, we have lawyers who really they're motivated by self-interest. If you can nail somebody as a cop, it's a feather in your cap. If you can nail somebody as a prosecutor, it's a feather in your cap. If you can get somebody off as a lawyer, it's a feather in your cap. And very often, I think that this starts to cloud how honest the people in the system are. There was a study, and I'm assuming that the study was fairly accurate, that said that as many as 1 in 14 people on death row are not, or actually were wrongfully convicted of the crimes that they were accused of. This isn't to say that maybe some of those 1 in 14 aren't guilty of something else that warrants the death penalty, but it was really, I think it was more, I wasn't going to vote for Bush anyways. It was more that I didn't like the way the court system runs in this country. And I've
that attitude, and that's a good one. I'm in pretty much agreement with you. Our adversarial system doesn't always bring us justice.
Well,
and it brings a lot of feathers and a lot of caps.
Well, it wouldn't bother me, the adversarial system. However, if a police officer or a prosecutor in particular lie or bring faulty evidence or withhold evidence, although there is a system for accountability in place in this country, they are rarely held accountable. What I would like to see among politicians, bureaucrats, I'd like to see when they step out of line, I'd like to see them held accountable. I'd like it when a bureaucrat or a politician or a cop does something that they know that when they are breaking the law, that the punishment that they will get will be as swift as what I will get if I break the law.
I think as an example from television on Fox News, I saw this, and maybe a lot of you saw it. The FBI had lied and wrongfully convicted a guy for 30 years.
I remember seeing that on the internet because I don't even
And man it. Alive, I was one of the most angry things I ever saw. The FBI agent who was responsible for it said, well, we had to turn this other guy, and it's just tough that the guy had to go to jail for more than 20 years and he wasn't guilty of anything.
Well, yeah, and that's the problem. He may be guilty of something else. However,
actually, he wasn't.
It is a problem that I'd like to find out that when officials do this, that they can be held accountable. And it bothered me that in Texas we have when George W. Bush was governor of Texas, so many executions took place under him, and probably most of those guys deserved it. But I'm not concerned with the guys who deserve it. I'm concerned with guys like you and me that may get caught in the ringer. And I do not want to be, Valentine or Silvera, we fried him, but we're trying to get everybody. So now and then we get an innocent guy.
I understand. And up in Illinois, they've had a real hassle. I think they've run into 4 or 5 on death row in Illinois that were not guilty now. And it was quite a scandal for a while. All right. Well, John, what that does, it leads us into why you would write a series about the coming American dictatorship. And the first part of that series said that there were 6 signs at the end of America's freedoms, or 6 signs of the coming of the end of our freedoms. So you want to start there?
No.
No?
Because right off the top of my head, I can't remember the 6 signs. But I will say that let me try to remember them. One of them was I see we have, a lot of people like to call them constitutional rights. I prefer not to. What's in the Bill of Rights, I prefer to call what the Founding Fathers called natural rights.
Inalienable rights, yes.
Yeah, or God-given rights. And there's a reason why it's important that we think of them that way. And it's because these rights, at least the philosophy under which this country has been set up, is that these rights existed long before the United States did. And that, in fact, these rights belong to everybody. That it doesn't matter what country you live in. If you live in China and you're being locked up for speaking out, it isn't that you don't have those rights in China. The philosophy that the Founding Fathers had of the country was you're simply being denied those rights.
I think that goes clear back to, in fact, my brother was telling me that he's writing a thing about the little-known history of the Scots at a place called Arbuth. and they wrote, and their writing is the exact words of the preamble to the Declaration of Independence,
that
all men are created with these inalienable rights. And then John Locke said it, and so on.
Yeah.
So I think that's right on, and I resent having to get a license in the state of Florida to carry my piece for my own protection. I have an inalienable right to my own protection. I don't need that constitutional right, and I believe you've written that as well.
Yeah, I agree with you, and not only that, but I also feel like not only do you have a right to carry a firearm, I actually don't believe that you should really have to have, like, even a driver's license. And driver's licenses were originally issued to say you were a safe driver, and I think also it became a way of taxing people. But now driver's licenses are withheld for all kinds of things. Suspected of being a deadbeat dad, well, in a lot of states, you can't get your driver's license now. One thing after another is now being tied to driver's license. And yet, to our founding fathers, the freedom to move about, well, it's just a natural right.
Well, you see, and my first tendency is to say, well, we need a way to deal with all of these myriad problems we have as a society, and the driver's license is really a privilege, as they say, rather than a right. And now I think I'm coming across why you would fear the American dictatorship. We always have a reason for curbing people's freedoms.
That's always a reason, and they always sound good.
All right. So that's the part two of your series, was how the creation of new legal rights is destroying our real rights, and that's where we are right now.
See, the problem with legal rights is that guess who's your natural rights are things that you're just supposed to have, and in fact, if you go through the Bill of Rights, all the rights in there are not provided by anyone except one, and that is the right to a trial. And what it says is that if your fellow citizens want to find you, you know, if they accuse you of a crime, then you have a right to a public hearing, a trial, and before the state can put you away, your peers, your fellow citizens, have to hear the evidence and make a decision themselves. On the other hand, you take a look at these new legal rights, everything from, well, people talk about, you know, a right to health services, a right to a place to live, a right to a job. Name all these rights. Who provides those rights? You do.
Yeah, Big Brother does.
Well,
us, through our
but in the
now.
End, no, Big Brother doesn't. Big Brother turns around and says, by the way, Tom, you have to have a certain quota of Lutherans. I don't know what he said, you know. But in the end, you'll find out that everything, and let me tell you, I mean, it's nice seeing handicapped parking at a McDonald's, but why is it forced on McDonald's? If McDonald's isn't going to provide handicapped parking and Burger King is, guess where people are going to go? But what the government is saying is that by making this blanket, everyone's got to provide handicapped parking, what they're saying is you must provide that right. I'm not saying that let's say handicapped parking shouldn't exist, but it is just a sign of the kind of thing that legal rights are, that they are things that somebody else has to provide.
Well,
they are not natural rights.
We used to have the saying of the scriptural people that God gives and God takes away. Now, you're pointing out it is the state that gives and the state that takes away.
And
so all of these things the state gives us, the state can also take away with
right.
the blink of an eye.
That's right. And not only that, but like I say, all too often, the state now says, you must give.
When you wrote this, John Ashcroft had not yet decided that he wanted to suspend a lot of the freedoms that we're talking about right now in order to deal with this, quote, terrorist situation.
The first words about that when on September 11th, the official response was, they hate us for our freedom and our wealth. And the first thing they did was say, well, what we've got to do to combat this is take away our freedom.
Yeah, we're going to come back to that. My guest is John Silvera, senior editor of Backwoods Home magazine, author of an interesting series. I tell you, I can get that on a CD-ROM, too. right back live. And we're talking with John Silvera, the senior editor of Backwoods Home Magazine. And he did a series that caught my eye. In fact, caught my eye over many months. Came out over a several month period, eight of them to be exact. And I'll tell you all right now, I'm going to list the series. If you were to go to backwoodshome.com, I think that's right. Is that right, John? Backwoodshome.com?
Backwoodshome.com. That's it, yeah.
Yeah, and there's a CD-ROM, and they're offering it for sale. And on that CD-ROM are all eight of the parts of this series. It begins with the six signs of the end of America's freedoms, how the creation of new legal rights is destroying our real rights. That's part two. Part three, the role bureaucracy plays in the destruction of the Constitution and the erosion of our rights. Part four, how the expanded use of executive orders has turned America into a dictatorship in limbo. Part five, how emergency powers and executive orders have turned America into a dictatorship in limbo. I already read that one. Oh, I see the emergency powers a little bit different, but it's okay. Part six, how judges and prosecutors have undermined the right of the American people to nullify laws. Ah, the fully informed jury and outfit. How the government wants to take control of the internet and why a professional military is a danger to us all. How and why the United States has become a fascist country and who's to blame. A fascinating series, and it's not the least bit shrill. You know, I want to compliment you on that.
Thank you.
I think you handle it as well as anybody I've seen, because it's a topic that can get your blood boiling.
Like the compliment, but you know, I try to keep a level-headed thing when I'm writing. But like I was telling a friend of mine, I said, when I'm talking to people and they don't, I feel like they don't see the light, I'm not as patient. And the way I speak with people is not necessarily the way I write. When I speak with people, as I told my friend, I feel like I have to tell them I have Tourette's. Because I really can get out of line.
Well, you and me both. Now, this MacDougall, he's either a very wise person that you really know, or he is a device, and I don't care which, because when one reads what you write, the wisdom that Mac teaches all of us is the important part of what you're saying.
Thank you.
Now, the World Trade Center attack, you had, this is an editorial you did outside of that series.
That's right.
Was it predictable?
Yeah, well, you know, I don't think I couldn't have predicted that they were going to hijack four planes and use them as bombs.
No, I understand what you're saying.
But the fact is that I think it's been a long time coming that we meddle with the rest of the world. You know, we, and particularly now, we are the world's only superpower, the last superpower. We meddle with these people. And we build up a lot of resentment. And to give you to help people to see what kind of resentments we're building up, if other countries were meddling with the United States the way we meddle with them, we'd be really mad.
May I read something to you and then see if you can tell me when it was written?
Go ahead.
It says, one of the great failures of our foreign policy throughout the world arises from the fact that we have permitted ourselves to be identified everywhere with the old, doomed, and rotting colonial, imperialist, small European nations, which once imposed upon so much of the world the pattern of exploitation and economic and political domination. None of these rebellious, awakening peoples will trust us or cooperate with us in any way so long as we remain identified with the economic colonial system of Europe, which represents, even in its capitalistic pattern, the last remnants of feudalism. We leave these awakening peoples with no choice but to turn to Russian and communist comfort and promise of utopia. Now, that was written in 1954.
Cool.
Louis Bromfield.
Who did?
Louis Bromfield. For a Tired World. It's exactly the same thing today. We're still continuing that European pattern, and we wonder why people hate us. And then, as you said before the break, The first thing that came out of the mouths of our president and the officials after that attack on the World Trade Center was, they hate us for our freedom. That's not why they hate us.
No, and, you know, one of the things is that maybe we get off light. You know, as I started doing, one of the things that's going to be in the next issue, it will not be an O.E. McDougall column, is the thing on nuclear terrorism. It's something that I really worry about.
Ah, nuclear terrorism. All right. My guest is John Silvera, and we're talking about the coming American dictatorship. Maybe it's already here. I'm Tom Valentine. This is Radio Free America. All right, we are back live on Radio Free America. My guest is John Silvera. John is a senior editor from Backwoods Home Magazine. And the purpose of our conversation tonight is because I read what John had to say, and I thought a lot of you might want to mull it over in your own minds about the coming American dictatorship. And John, I know you're a computer person. I am relatively new to the computer world, but about a year and a half ago, I got involved in the chat rooms on AOL, and in one chat room in particular. And I have very foolishly probably allowed it to be known who I was and that this show existed. And so many in that chat room, we call ourselves the regulars, are listening and critiquing the show, if you will, so to speak.
Uh-oh.
And one of the interesting debates in the chat room in the last few days has been whether or not it is the fault of the people or the fault of those who are manipulating the people. See, I'm one that says these people are allowing themselves to be manipulated. They're idiots. They don't exercise their individual rights and so on. And these others are saying, well, I'm selling the individual short because the sleeping dog can wake up and make these reforms. And I'm just wondering your views on that.
The history is that the sleeping dogs usually keep sleeping. I would say, if somebody asked me, gee, John, you all these things that you see wrong with this country, who do you blame? I blame the average American. I've had people ask me, you know, how I feel about, well, what about, you know, the New World Order, the bankers, the corporations, the anything.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't, but here's my answer to that. It doesn't matter whether there's a conspiracy or not. If there is a conspiracy, only thing that will save us is if the average people stand up and say they want it, they want their rights. If there is no conspiracy, and just that dreadful thing that happens in history that bureaucracies get bigger, admin take over, what have you, the only thing that will save us is if people stand up and demand their rights. And the solution, what I'm saying is the solution is the same, regardless of the problem. And the fact is that the American people don't stand up. They do not take responsibility. They do not demand their rights. In fact, the usual thing is, I want my rights, but I really don't like the way that my neighbor does this or that. I mean, everything from zoning boards to bureaucrats to disliking gays to disliking blacks, disliking anybody, I want those people kept in their place, but I want my rights. What people have got to understand is that in the long haul, we've got to all stand up for our rights, and we've got to understand that everyone's going to have their rights, and we may not like what other people are doing, but as long as it's consenting adults making choices about anything, I don't care if they're, you know, if they want to buy beer or they want to buy cocaine or they want to gamble, or they want to put an addition on their house, it's their business.
All right, that's the libertarian point of view.
Yeah, I'm very, very libertarian, except probably I disagree with the libertarians on a few things, and among them being the military.
Yeah, well, I disagree that we can allow the narcotics and everything, but I don't know the answer to these problems. We human beings have this damnable ability to confound the angels with our behavior and our thinking. We're really something, you know. We're a piece of work.
Oh, yeah.
I have to agree that you're right on. It lies with the individual. Now, a citizen is an individual that exercises his responsibilities of citizenship. A subject is one that allows Big Brother to do all the dictating.
That's right. And most people don't realize that they're not subjects. Most people don't realize that they have these rights, and that those rights, by the way, did not come from the government. In fact, in the end, one of the things that I find laughable is when somebody says, well, the Supreme Court ruled that. Well, What we're talking about when the Supreme Court rules on something is we're talking about a branch of the government, the federal government, making the ruling on what our rights are.
Yeah, and actually they are simply there to be a check and a balance against the other two branches of the government.
Yeah, and that's only out of tradition. There's nowhere in the Constitution that says that they're a check.
Well, actually, the very first whittle of whittling the Constitution down was the Supreme Court. I believe it was John Jay, wasn't he, who said that the Supreme Court, the federal courts have jurisdiction over the others.
It may have been John Jay, it may have been John Marshall. But
John Marshall, I'm sorry, yeah. But anyway, that was the first time, that was the first thing we did as a government to whittle down the Constitution that we had just established to keep government under control.
There was an upside to that in that the, at least... Somebody in the federal government was putting a check on the legislative and executive branches. However, the downside is that people have got to realize that in the end, we're the final arbiters of this. These are our rights. This is our Constitution. That Constitution does not belong to Congress, the President, or the courts. It belongs to us.
And we are the sleeping dog, and you don't think it's really going to ever wake up with enough mass to do anything.
I have a feeling that we're going to just follow the same road that most other countries have followed. And someday people will look back, historians will look back on the late, great United States. It's kind of funny, isn't it? They had it all, and they just let it slip away.
Yep, slip sliding away.
You got it?
All right. One of the things that you have done, among many things, is you kind of... gone after the presidency. MacDougall was raiding the presidents. And I was surprised, but I was delighted at the list of who were the greatest presidents and who were the worst. You remember that?
Oh, yeah, I remember it. And, you know, it's one of those things that I think I said it in the article, when you make a list of anything greatest, it doesn't matter if it's movies, baseball players, mathematicians, presidents, you have to have a criteria that your list is based on. Otherwise, you have two people talking apples and oranges, and they can't get along. Well, my sole criteria, because the media, and most intellectuals feel like the top of the list is FDR.
Yes.
And maybe they put next on the list Woodrow Wilson. Very often, those are the two guys at the top.
Lincoln,
yeah. My list, of course, all three of those guys wind up down near the bottom. And the only reason they do is my list in the article I wrote was based on how well did they adhere to the Constitution. And each of those guys stepped outside the bounds of the Constitution. And in particular, FDR did.
Oh, in a big way.
And in fact, it is because of FDR, and FDR, on assuming the presidency, he demanded with a sort of a veiled threat to Congress that if they didn't agree to some of his legislation, he would more or less act as a dictator, and he would just do things. And they gave in to him, and that's where we got the amendment to the War Powers Act that was passed under Wilson. Under Wilson. And now has been handed down one president after another. I don't know if people ever stop to think about it. I mean, there was a big thing in Vietnam was why do I have to go? This isn't a declared war. What are we doing over there? Well, all you had to do was look at the orders that sent us over there. They were executive orders. And under the amended War Powers Act, anytime the president or the secretary of the treasury declares a state of emergency, it's the Constitution's largely suspended. He does not have to go to the Congress.
Yeah, a lot of people have no idea that Korea was not a declared war.
No, we have not been in a war since sometime, I think, in September of 1945 when the Japanese surrender became formal. We have not fought a war.
September the 8th, 1945.
It was September 8th?
Yep.
Okay, well, then that's the last day that the United States was in a war, and I'll make a prediction. We will never be in a war again.
No, I think we're in Orwell's 1984 period, and there's no longer that. And people, you know, they're surprised when I say I don't watch the news on this war against terror that's going on. I say I don't want to feel like the character in Orwell's 1984 that the television is getting me all excited over who's bombing whom.
Yeah, Winston Smith. That's the name of the character.
Yeah.
The,
anyway, how did they adhere to the Constitution was the criteria for judging presidents. Which president then adhered to the Constitution the best?
Actually, when you get right down to them, none of them did. But if you want to find the guys who remained closest, the first 15 presidents come closest. And that even includes the guy, who was it, Benjamin, no, not Harrison, the, oh, I can't remember Harrison's
William first. Henry Harrison? Or
yes,
Benjamin.
William Henry Harrison, yeah. Who only lived a month. But the thing is that those all...
But Harrison had a vice president that was probably the best.
John Taylor.
Tyler.
John Tyler, yeah.
Yeah.
He was, I like Tyler. In fact, there isn't an awful lot to dislike in any of the first 15 presidents. They all tended to adhere to the Constitution. A few of them didn't. And when they stepped out of bounds, it was more forgivable than what they're doing now. I mean, the Louisiana Purchase by Jefferson, it was by no means a constitutional purchase. It turned out to be fortuitous for the United States. It was bad news for the Indians, but it was, you know, good for the Americans.
Mm-hmm.
There were other things. One of the presidents who's been damned by history is James Buchanan, the predecessor to Lincoln. And he's condemned for saying he couldn't do anything about the South if they wanted to leave when South Carolina seceded. The fact is that he was obeying the law. And I'm not so sure that allowing the South to secede would have been a bad idea.
Well, in fact, that came up in the chat room today. I mentioned that it was unconstitutional to preserve the Union. Because the Constitution very clearly says that they have the right, the states have the rights.
It seems that way. I mean,
yeah.
But, you know, it's obviously never going to happen now.
Well, and I don't know. Did you know that Colorado and Utah both have legislation pending that they ever get around to passing it, that they want to have the right to secede?
No kidding.
The 50th Amendment is what it's called. A group calls themselves the 50th Amendment, or the 50 States something, 50 States group. I had them as a guest years ago. Interesting bunch.
I would hate to see the United States break up. And I would not, I mean, I'm glad that the South is still part of the United States. However, the states needed a viable threat to check the power, the growing and expanding power of the federal government. There are no checks.
All right. We're going to get to that point because we're getting towards the isms and we're going to be jumping over a lot of things. I'm not sure I want to do that, but we have covered the fact of emergency powers, and that leads to dictatorship, and that very clear. How the government wants to take control of the Internet, and why a professional military is a danger to us all. That was one of the most recent ones. That's part 7.
Yeah. Can I say something that I'm just curious about?
You can say anything you want to say.
Well, what I want to say, we were talking about the thing on September 11th. And one of the things that I don't discuss this with many people, but one
right
of the,
now.
Yeah, I know. But one of the things I totally agree with Bush that we have to get Bin Laden and Al Qaeda, and I mean, we can't let people do this to us. But on the other hand, because I feel like we had a hand in bringing this on ourselves. The thing that bothers me is that there are people that have made American policy for the last 50 or 60 years with blood in their hands.
That's right, and they're going to get away with it scot-free.
And
Bin Laden, who knows what's going to happen to him.
Yeah, and I mean, I hope he gets hacked up. But on the other hand, I look at the, what I had talked about earlier, and I said that what we need is we need sure accountability on the part of public officials when they're doing something wrong. And, of course, that accountability can't happen as long as the American people haven't got a clue as to what's going on. I guess there's a program on called Survivor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, more people can tell you who should be voted off Survivor than can tell you, give you the Republican position on why we shouldn't have a minimum wage law. That's always a great question to ask people because Well, because they're trying to make business richer. Well, maybe they are, but what's their position? You know, what is their argument? And most people haven't got a clue. These are things that affect their lives. You know, we all know who's pregnant on Friends and, you know, who should be thrown off the island and stuff like that. But nobody seems to really know what the issues that affect their lives really are.
Well, we're right back then to all the people are really responsible. And they're responsible to know these things, but it's too much work.
Apparently,
I think a lot of them are malnourished. Their brains don't work well anyway. But, you know, we have a catch-22 with this Al-Qaeda thing and the World Trade Center attack. And you just put your finger on it. Yes, these people were vicious murderers and should be caught and hanged and ended right now. But at the same time, a lot of our policies brought this upon us, and the people responsible for the American Free Press, who sponsors my show, is a newspaper that brings out and points out all the time that the, and you get to it in part eight when you start talking about fascism and so all the isms that are in, the powers that be, for want of a better word, but the manipulators of the financial end of this huge society of ours, are running the show. They want the mineral wealth and the oil that's in Afghanistan. And that underlies all of it. And we get right back to what I read by Lewis Bromfield. We are continuing the European pattern of colonialism under a different name.
Okay, I'll buy into that.
And now, you and I don't want to colonize these people. So those who are doing this and causing us to have this grief are going to never be punished.
No, and the thing is people won't even pay attention to what they're doing. And I guess what worries me is this. It could be we got off light with the World Trade Center and Pentagon thing. It could be that, you know, what if one of these guys gets one of these suitcase nukes that may or may not be missing from the Soviet nuclear inventory?
I think that's very real if they are missing.
And they don't even have to set it off here. If they set it off in London or they set it off in Tel Aviv, what is that going to mean to us? Well, I'll tell you what it's going to mean. It's going to mean that we're going to have a constitution that won't mean a damn thing. And we're going to see our lives change forever and ever. And in the end, I know we'll blame the terrorists that did it, but will we ever stop and say, what did we do to bring this on? Because, I mean, they're people just like us. And as much as I do not want to see... I do not want to see another attack on this country, but I do not want to see – it's not going to – it'll only happen as a revenge thing, just what? As the first one did.
It just dawned on me as you were talking, the irony of ironies. The oil industry is the reason, supposedly, that we went to Desert Storm and set Saddam Hussein up and beat him to death as our patsy and all of that Kuwait Desert Storm mess over oil. And yet – Our right now, our present huge scandal is energy. So, you know, it's energy is something we really have to have, and the people all want it, and yet you've got this corruption in the energy field. I don't know if I'm saying what I'm really thinking, but there's an irony here.
Oh, let's get back to that when we come back.
My guest is John Silvera. We're taking a break, and we're going to go to your phone calls in the entire next hour. All right, final leg of the first hour coming down right now. My guest is John Silvera. He's a senior editor at Backwoods Home Magazine. If you go to backwoodshome.com, you can learn all about it. They have all of his articles, and then, believe me, they are in depth. They are well done. They are not shrill. And you can get them on a CD-ROM if you wanted to go there. Now, I'm not smart enough to have put into words exactly what my nose for news smells here, John, but I smell some kind of an irony when Enron can have the ripoff of all ripoffs, and they're an energy company, and yet oil wars are the reason that we're going over to Afghanistan even.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that's why we're in Afghanistan. I have a friend who talked to me about that, and I give her, I trust her opinion on most things, and she may be right, but, you know, one of the things that I've got to say is this. Let's go back to Desert Storm. What if we had never gone into Kuwait to throw Hussein out? What would have happened?
Nothing.
That's right. He needed to sell that oil. In the end, all he was looking for was the money. And I'm not sure if it's because we have more control over the Saudis and the Kuwaitis, and didn't have it over his hand. I mean, it's still not clear in my mind exactly why we meddled in that. There was this, I've had people say, oh, gas would cost $5 a gallon. Well, even at $5 a gallon. I use about 10 gallons of gasoline a week. So if you double the price or even if you triple the price, it's not going to break. However, I don't think that would have happened. I think that he was looking for the income, thought he'd get it, didn't realize that we'd come after him, and we did. I've got to admit, it was real pretty watching those smart bombs going through windows on TV. But in the end, I'm not sure that it was that it was necessary. It was a Middle Eastern squabble that we really had no business in, and we'd have been getting the oil anyway. In fact, he's trying to sell oil now.
How about old chapter wrong, you see? The fuzzy wuzzies are giving us a problem there in the colonies. And we can't have those colonies dictating their own business. We have to dictate their business. And we had to keep those colonies straight. So we sent our envoy over, you see, and she told Saddam it would be perfectly all right to go after those dastardly Kuwaitis who were drilling sideways into his oil. And then, of course, after he thought that we would do nothing, then he went in and we nailed him and we fixed those colonials. And they know their place now.
Well, that's the feeling I get. I get the feeling that may be exactly what it was. But, you know, now we're talking about Afghanistan, and I'm not sure if energy is the issue, and it turns out, I guess, that they have one of the largest.
Why did Russia attack Afghanistan?
I don't know.
Because they didn't like Muslims?
That's a good question.
Russia wanted the tremendous wealth that's in Afghanistan. Afghanistan has no infrastructure in which to make itself one of the wealthiest nations in the world. But by golly, we do.
Yeah.
And any good excuse, and we've gotten one now, we've got a real one now.
Well, and that may be exactly it. It would be sad to find out that this is,
One of the people in that chat room I mentioned, one of the regulars, had a wife who was on one of the planes. Oh. And I remember him posting that it would make me sick to think that my wife died because of these manipulators wanting the oil in Afghanistan.
Well,
anyway, we're running out of time in this first hour, and my guest is John Silvera. And folks, in the next hour, we're going to go right to your telephone calls. You probably have all kinds of comments and questions and who knows what for my guest. You can call 1-800-259-9231. Write it down, 1-800-259-9231. And young Joe will take your call and put you up on the air, and we'll have your 2 bits worth. In this debate about the coming American dictatorship. Now, we're not going to go to your calls immediately because we still have one more segment to deal with my guest. So, we'll take a short break, and then we shall be back. Oh, pardon me. I don't have a cough button. I'm Tom Valentine. This is Radio Free America.
This is Radio Free America, the talk show for intelligent Americans, brought to you by the American Free Press. And now, here's your host, Tom Valentine.
Oh, yep. All right, you intelligent Americans. Come on. Anyway, I love it. My guest tonight is John Silvera. And before we go to the telephones and the number to call in, 1-800-259-9231. And you can start dialing up now. We'll get there. John, the last thing I want to get into, and the thing that did it for me, the reason I wanted to bring you aboard as a guest was part 8 of your series. And it's one of my favorite topics because you're one of the few writers that sees it the way I do. Not that we're both right or anything, but...
Yes, we are.
Why, yes, the United States has become a fascist country, and who's to blame?
We are.
Yes, you and I agree, the people are. But fascism, oh, that's a horrible, horrible thing to say.
People equate fascism with concentration camps. Fascism is an economic and a social theory. That just the way communism and the idea of communism is the state owns everything. At least in perfect communism, there is no private property.
That's right.
In socialism, I guess you could loosely say that, well, there is private property, but the government controls the main industries and the big industries, like, you know, energy. Pardon me?
I said, I understand that.
Yeah, and fascism is this nice little blend of private ownership and no government ownership necessarily, but government control. And it can, and in this country, we see it in everything from zoning laws to government regulations through the FDA or
OSHA,
the banking system, anything. And it is, we no longer, the EPA, that's, you know, one of the worst offenders now.
You
suddenly discover that your property is up to use for the common good. It isn't necessarily yours anymore. A man's home is no longer his castle.
Is that the truth? You know, one of my friends is up in Everett, Washington, and he's a Vietnam vet and has a little store. And he called, and he's really upset because the state of Washington wants to put a meter on his well. He's on the boondocks. He's got a water well. That's his water. He had water rights to that property. You know that they're now moving that you cannot sell property with the water rights in the state of Washington?
I did not know that.
Yeah, it's scary. I mean, it's really scary. Property. The original line of the, I guess it's Declaration of Independence, that we have inalienable rights to the life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Well, before that, John Locke did not have pursuit of happiness. He had pursuit of property.
Yeah, I've read that. And essentially, happiness there isn't feel good stuff.
No,
it is what it takes to make your life content, and very often it is your property, your possession.
Well, that's right, your possession, and it doesn't have to be real estate or a castle. It is what you possess that is yours.
Yeah,
11 and a half, and we don't have anything anymore.
Oh well, and if we do have anything, we're having less and less. But what I also wanted to point out is that the difference is not the difference between socialism, fascism, communism, and all these things is not what's important. They're really all left-wing philosophies, even though we think of, oh, fascism, that's a right-wing philosophy. It isn't.
No.
It's over there. It is what we today would call a left-wing philosophy. And it was a left-wing philosophy up until World War II, when all of a sudden they decided they didn't like Mussolini and Hitler. But the real thing, I think there's an English historian, I was told, named MacDonald, but don't hold me to this, who said, and this is, and I agree with him, he said, the difference is not, you know, communism, socialism, fascism. He said, the difference is how much government control do you want in your life and you want in the country. The more government control that you are willing to allow, the further to the left you really are. And from a libertarian point of view, we want very little government control.
That's right. I have to deal with the FDA in my business.
And you shouldn't have to.
And it's really awful. All right, we're going to go to your calls. John Silvera is my guest. I'm Tom Valentine. This is Radio Free America. All right, everybody. We're talking tonight with John Silvera. And if you want to check on the computer, www.backwoodshome.com. You can see the whole magazine, and you might want to do like I did many years ago, subscribe. I don't really intend to run off to the boondocks. I'm as close to the boondocks as I want to get, but a lot of people want to make changes, and this is a magazine for people who do want to get out and be able to be self-sufficient. This is the Rugged Individuals How-To magazine, if you will. And John Silvera is a senior editor, and he's gotten quite political and quite popular. And I'm delighted to be able to say he's our guest tonight. And before we go to the calls, to make that point about how much government control do we want in our lives, the story of little Thomas Navarro that I followed on this radio talk show for 2 years. He was 4 years old. He got a brain tumor. And his parents found out that he could be treated non-toxic therapy by a doctor named Brzezinski in Houston. But the government, the FDA, said, no, you have to take chemotherapy and radiation first. That's our rule. And the boy died. And it was a valiant struggle, and he finally got to Brzezinski's therapy, but of course it was too late. And how much control does the government have over your right to your freedom of choice and health matters? See, that's...
You asked me?
Oh, that's rhetorical, I guess, but I was in a way.
I think that it has no business there. It has no business. The FDA, if they want to have an FDA, it should be, to me, no more than an advisory board. And I feel as though at times, although the drug companies complain about the FDA, the FDA protects the...
the FDA was set up by them. It's a revolving door into the leadership of both.
Well, it protects the drug companies. It protects them from competition. In the end, if I want to do something, even if it's foolish with my own body, it's not the place of the FDA to say no. And it's not the place of the FDA to throw me in jail for doing something with my own body. And if I want to take an alternative treatment, which I'm not likely to do, but I may, I want that option.
Absolutely.
And that's all I want is the option. I'll suffer my own mistakes. I'm not going to live forever anyway. But I'm more than willing to pay for my own mistakes, and I'm pretty careful with myself. But I'm overweight.
All right, so am I. Bill in Alabama, you're first up tonight with John Severa.
Hello, Bill. Let me shut this radio off here. Oh, there we go. Sorry about that.
That's all right, Bill.
Trying to do four things at one time. Can you hear me all right?
Just fine.
That's good. A couple of points here. Point number one, it was the 11th of September, but the year was 1990, 11 years to the day prior to the attacks on New York and Washington, D.C., that the current president's father, George Dolan Bones Herbert, Council on Foreign Relations, Walker, Trilateral Commission, Bush, yes, that guy, made one of his speeches in which he said that there was a fifth objective to the Gulf War that was upcoming later on, and that fifth objective was a new world order in which the United Nations organization would act as its founding fathers had intended it to. Now, go ask any old Tom, Dick, or Harry down the street if they remember that speech, of course, pending the fact that they were old enough to. And if they do remember that speech, ask them then, if that was the case, who were the founding fathers of the United Nations? And see how many people, just pick on the main founding father, namely the man who sat as Secretary General in San Francisco. His name was Alger Hiss. It's not like it's a conspiracy. These people are throwing this stuff right in our faces.
You're right. It's not a conspiracy. It's not hidden.
It's right in our faces. Well, it is, and it's hatched in secrecy, and it's against constitutional law, so that does make it a conspiracy. But they are throwing it right in our faces, and people are lapping it up.
So, Alden, I can assume that you would agree with John, my guest, and myself, that the fault lies with the people.
Well, yes, to a degree. The leaders and the people, and I'll tell you where the fault really lies, and that's with the 501c3 quote-unquote churches, where people are fed pap, and they are not given that which can set them free. It's a three-way fault. You know, all I can think of is a verse in Scripture, Jeremiah chapter 5, verses 30 and 31, I believe it is, at the end of chapter 5, that a terrible and wonderful thing has happened in the land when the prophets prophesy falsely and the priests bear rule by their means, and my people, they love to have it so, and what shall the end be thereof? And one more thing real quick before I ring off of here, concerning health supplements and therapies, one book, and they also have this out in videotape, I don't know if you've read it, Tom, World Without Cancer, the story of vitamin D.
Oh, my goodness. I know Mr. Griffin going clear back to the 60s. I'm quite
good.
Familiar with it.
Yes. Well,
and he's a big advocate of Laetrile, and I was too at one time, but Laetrile's not the cure-all that a lot of people think it is. Anyway, let's not go too far afield here, Bill. I appreciate your call. John, any comment on what Bill has to say?
Well, I mean, I still think it comes back to if, well, Americans are getting the government and they're getting the government that they deserve. Because they are not paying attention. We can try to lay it on the leaders, the UN, the churches, or anyone like
that. Well,
like
public
that.
Schools, too, you know. We've
yeah.
got that.
And if the American people took a stand, said, we want our rights, we want our Constitution, it would be very hard for any conspiracy, overt or covert, to take this stuff away. People just don't know what's going on. I've told people, I feel like I'm spitting into the wind. And mm-hmm. some of my friends have said, well, you know, you got to keep doing it. Sometimes I feel like I write this stuff just because I get paid for it.
John, but, I know how you feel. I've wanted to quit so many times, and you can't quit.
Yeah, well, like I don't know what else to do. But in the end, when I wrote this series, and sometimes I feel like I could have done a lot better job with it. And Dave wants to put out a book on it. In fact, we're putting a book together. And he'd like it faster than I'm writing it because I'm trying to make the thing flow as a book. But this is not a sales pitch for a book that I'm writing.
Well, when it's written, we'll pitch it for you.
Okay, but the bottom line is that I'm trying to tell people that you really have to find out what your rights are. And I have a brother in New Hampshire who said that he talked to people and he said, well, losing our freedoms, and it's a well, we got too much, people would say to him, we got too many freedoms as it is. And he said, I don't know what to say. And I said, well, then ask them which ones they want to get rid of. I said, start out with the First Amendment.
Well, I want to get rid of my neighbor's freedoms, not mine.
Well, that's true, that's how people feel. But a lot of times if you say to somebody, First Amendment, keep it or get rid of it. Well, I don't know what it says. Well, how about the Fifth Amendment? Keep it or get rid of it. I have told people for a long time, you better read the document, better read the Constitution, read it several times because it is very, very dense, especially the original Constitution, very dense, and there are still surprises in there that I find every once in a while. But the amendments, in particular the first 10 amendments, you should know what they are so that when they start taking them away, you can start screaming. And in particular, pay attention to the Ninth Amendment, Tenth Amendment.
Right, but how about the ones that really changed things, like the 17th and so on, the ones that got rid of the people didn't elect the president. The House of Representatives did, originally. And the senators were from the states, represented the states.
Yes.
And that was not a bad system.
Well, the representatives never elected the president, except in the case of John Adams, when he was John Quincy Adams.
Yeah.
That was the only one I think that was thrown to the House. But the electoral vote, I had no problem with the electoral vote. The electoral vote was, I think, originally invented because nobody imagined a two-party system. And the idea was, we'll get a leader. You know, it isn't necessary that the leader have a majority. But we need a transition. It's a smooth system. I know a lot of people hate it, but it works. And in the end, the senators, however, were supposed to represent the state. They were supposed to be elected by the legislature. It was not supposed to be a popularity contest. And one of the things that's kind of funny about that whole thing with the Senate now being popularly elected, and I think that started in 1916.
Yep.
Name one great senator since 1916. On the other hand, name two or three or four great senators before 1916. I mean, people know who...
John Calhoun.
Yeah, Calhoun, Clay, Webster. They know who these men were. Now we have... we're electing guys to the Senate whose prime thing is how much can they play up to the media. Probably no senator from the 19th century, none of the great senators would have ever been elected today. And it's almost a guarantee that none of the founding fathers could make it as a president today. They do not have people pick their candidate on how they sound, how they look, what they say about feel-good propositions and what.
Well, you know, there have been some technological changes that involve this too. I mean, we do have the electronic media now, and so it's much easier to distract us than it has ever been before.
Well, you know, it may be the electronic media, but one of the things that kind of surprised me was, I don't know if you ever read de Tocqueville's book, and there were a lot of things in Alex?
Forced reading in high school, John. They don't do that anymore, I'll bet.
Okay, they probably don't. And I didn't read it in high school. I read it after high school, and I don't know why I didn't read it in high school, but I'm glad I read it when I was more mature. De Tocqueville talked about going through the backwater America, and he was surprised to get to some of these little podunk towns that had only a few dozen people.
Oops. You hang on to that thought. We'll come back. I'm John Valentine, Radio Free America. All right, we are back live, and things move fast when you're having fun. Now, John Silvera, I hope you kept everything in mind that you were cut off at the break.
That's okay.
It has to do with the Senate, but go right ahead.
Well, no, what I had said, we were talking about people not being in touch, and I started talking about a thing with de Tocqueville, and I said that one of the things he said, he was surprised. He said it didn't happen in Europe. He said you went to these backwater towns and they only have a few dozen people in service, only a few hundred people around the town, outlying farms. He said about once a week these people would come into towns, they'd have like a town meeting, and people would debate. It was entertainment. And, you know, today we have people who pride themselves on never arguing about religion or politics. That's what these people did. And one of the things that they knew, these people knew the Constitution. They knew their rights. They knew what was going on in their world. There was no TV. We had, I know what led to this. It was electronic media. I think that despite the fact that we have an opportunity to learn a lot because of the electronic media, there's more information available to the average person now than has ever been available in history. Just a few years ago, people were talking about the Internet. They put their arms way apart and say, the Internet is this wide. They'd hold their fingers about an inch apart and say, but it's only this deep. That's changed a lot. The information's there. Anybody who wants to find out anything can find out an awful lot of stuff on the Internet alone.
That's true.
But the problem is that despite all that information, it's amazing how ignorant people are.
You get your choice. The muse, you know, the muse is about our mind. And amuse, to amuse me, is without thinking. And we've got this tremendous electronic media not only giving us all the information that could be at our fingertips that would help us be better citizens, it also gives us a great deal more amusement.
Brain candy.
That's where everybody's going. That's right.
I guess that in the end, I'm very selfish, by the way. I want you to know that. And in the end, the reason I've written this series, the reason I write all my articles, the reason I will continue to write articles like this is because I want these things for myself. I want freedom for myself. I love freedom.
Yes.
And I'm not talking about license, because that's another thing that people have a problem with. They don't understand the difference between freedom and license. I've had people say, well, you know, if we all were free like you want, we'd be able to kill each other. No. Freedom, when I talk about freedom, I'm talking about the freedom that this country is founded upon. If the founding fathers didn't expect to, you know, urinate in the streets or kill each other or anything like that, they believe in what you had said earlier, that we are all responsible and we have to use our freedom responsibly.
It's like we go on red and we stop on red and go on green.
Yeah, and, you know, it's one of those things that contrary, I can't remember which the Supreme Court justice said, you know, free speech doesn't mean that you can yell fire in a crowded theater. Well, actually it does. But the problem is, you also have to pay the consequences for illicit use of your freedom.
Mike in Pennsylvania, you're on. John Silvera is my guest.
listened to Tom in a long time, your broadcast. I tuned in tonight for the first time in a long time. But I really agree with everything that's been said. It goes back to what Plato said, the people only have the type of government which they, in fact, deserve. So, and I got to agree with that 100%. I'm going to have to go to the website and check out the magazine and the articles. But in Pennsylvania, where I'm from here, we have coal mines, coal mining companies, I should say, that are mining under people's homes, longwall mining, and it's destroying people's homes because after they remove all the coal and stuff, the ground sags and the homes, the foundation shifts and stuff.
And that happened in Long Beach, California, when they took the oil out, too. The whole town sank.
And now there's a big dispute as to the coal right, because some of these people actually did still own the coal right when you were talking about property rights. But yet the coal mining companies went in and removed the coal anyway, even though they didn't have the coal mining, the mineral rights under the property. And it's, you know, it's just a big deal of who actually owns the coal rights. Not only
selling the property. And that's a case of accountability. When you do something like that, somebody should realize that they can be held accountable for this.
Well, it used to be they could. With the court system in Pennsylvania today, there's an amazing reluctance to actually hold them accountable.
Well, and once again, this is why I say comes down to our fault. In the end, the people have got to realize, what is it Will Rogers used to call these people? The hired help. People have got to realize that everyone from the president, Congress, down to the local government are all hired help.
Absolutely.
Mike, I thank you for the call, and it's a very good one. I'm Tom Valentine. We'll be right back. Okay, we are back live, and this is a long time. We got a good, nice spread here before the next break. And before I go to the next phone call, my guest, by the way, is John Silvera of Backwoods Home Magazine. And as I said at the top of the first hour, Backwoods Home Magazine is on my list of favorite magazines. The American Free Press, of course, is the best newspaper in America. I read it. Acres USA, the Ecological Farm Journal, the Organic Farm Journal, I read it every single month and wouldn't miss it. The Barnes Review, you just heard the commercial for the Barnes Review. That's historic revisionism at its very best. And Backwoods Home, a magazine for the rugged individual. And those of you who are not on the Internet, I've given the Internet site many times. You may write to Backwoods Home at Post Office Box 712. Write this down. Post Office Box 712, Gold Beach, Oregon. That's Gold Beach, Oregon. The zip code is 97444. Telephone number, 541-247-8900. There you go, John. That's a good plug.
Thanks a lot.
All right. Now,
one of the things also about the magazine is that it isn't necessarily just for people who want to get back and live the bare minimum. It is really a self-reliance magazine, and it kind of goes, the title, I think, belies what it's about. It really is for anyone who wants to live a self-reliant lifestyle. It almost doesn't matter where you do it. It's just that we tend toward the rural family.
I think it's a terrific magazine. In fact, the fellow you have with the guns, Ayub, is excellent.
Yeah, I'm going to do an interview with him in a few months.
All right. Now, that chat room I mentioned, I'm told, Anne in Virginia. Are you one of them?
Yes.
Well, hi. Welcome aboard, Anne.
Hi, how are you? This is Anna. How are you doing?
Just fine.
I'm Soft Snow 1 in the chat room.
You're which?
Soft. No, one.
Why, Soft, how welcome you are.
Ah, how are you doing?
Let me explain to the folks out there. In the AOL chat rooms, we know one another by our SNs, the designated names we use, and Anne's designated name is Soft, and Soft something or other.
Soft, no, one.
There you go. And so, well, Anne, what do you think?
Well, I enjoy your show. Very interesting. It's only the second time I've heard it.
Well, that's good.
Yes.
I was threatened with some real tear-me-up calls from the group tonight.
Oh, where are they? Oh, really? I wouldn't know anything about that.
All right. Well, I'm delighted you called in, and have you got a comment for my guest?
Well, it's interesting what he's been talking about. Very, very interesting on the different subjects and the also the government issues.
All right. That's what it's all about, and that's what we want it to be about.
There was an interesting segment I saw on Fox Station a couple nights ago, and they talked about income taxes, and they were talking about if there's going to be a petition that they're going to take to Washington, D.C., and saying that it was unconstitutional.
Well, it is.
Right. What I'm talking about is specifically is they were talking about the so-called Constitution was done in 1895 and 1896. And then they said it was supposed to be institutionalized and set in a constitution form in 1905. But they have gone back and they've rediscovered that it is not, and that it's not constitutional on any income tax of withholding.
Well, I wonder what took them so long, huh, John?
I don't have the foggiest idea, Tom.
Well,
yeah, I
thank you for the call. I think income tax is John right square in the Constitution.
Yeah, one of the things about the income tax, I don't know if it's that amendment was passed properly or not. But once again, the bitter end on it is, if the American people do not want to see income taxes collect or taxes collected the way they are, the American people have to stand up and say no. And that's the problem, is that a thing on the Fox Network, they're going to do a petition, they're going to take it to Washington, and in 6 months or a year, everyone will kind of forget about it. I mean, there are always the diehards at the center of things that say, I really would like to see a real difference made in this country. But the fact is that people's attention spans are short, and their memories are even shorter.
That's right. Well, Ann, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. I would like to see just a consumption tax, a sales tax, period. No property tax, no income tax, because neither one of them, the right to tax is the right to control your life. And then the people better wake up. And, of course, as you and I have been saying for years and years, we don't think they will, but we sure keep trying to do it.
Yeah, I think it was a Brandeis of the Supreme Court who said the power to tax is the power to destroy.
There you go.
And John, what are you going to say?
No, I was going to get our next caller, but go ahead.
Go ahead. Go for it.
No, you had more to say about Brandon.
No, I just was going to say that, people have complained about taxes ever since I was a kid. And in the bitter end, the American people apparently have given up. Oh, they don't realize that they can say no.
Today you have a huge group of people out there who say, I think it's my duty and my right and my pleasure to pay taxes for all this good stuff government gives me.
Yeah, and unfortunately, they don't give you very much.
No. And then there's that guy that advertises on the radio somewhere about buy his book that all the government gives of giveaways.
I know who you're talking about.
Oh, he goes,
that's the name. And I look and I think to myself, well, people who buy that book are part of the problem.
They are. They are really part of the problem.
If people want all kinds of handouts. I want smaller government. I want less in taxes. I want more freedom, but that's for me.
Yeah.
For you guys, I'd like them to hold back.
John in Florida, you're up with John in Oregon.
Hey, Joe, Tom, and enjoy Mr. Silvera. Previous caller called about 501(c) and churches.
Yep.
He didn't mention such groups as the American Legion, VFW. All these groups have gotten their tax exemption by applying for it, and of course they agreed not to speak about politics in their meetings. So there's no discussion like they have in the famous old Irish pubs in Ireland, apparently, and people are not getting the word around, arguing among themselves, except in the state of New Hampshire, where they have the town meetings. There's no state income tax up there. There's no state tax, sales tax up there. And it could well be attributed to the the amount of interest that the citizens have. Yet they have a good sound economy. And for you, Tom, if you like to protect yourself and do it without the government regulating, you should move to Vermont.
Well, I've heard that, and I have no income tax in Florida, no state income tax in Florida. And that was one of the things that we decided to move down here for. John, you said it very well.
I would like to also ask about the this third world war that we're in right now. Apparently, all the wars for the last 200 years have been fomented, if it were, if you will, by the internationalists. And there's some people that do believe that. What better way than to hire the terrorists as a who have the small cells into 60 different countries, is it not, someone
yeah,
said?
Yeah, and John, you make your point. I mean, this is like the sinking of the Lusitania or the attack on Pearl Harbor or the very big setup in Havana by Mr. Hearst when he said, here's my war. You wonder about this, don't you?
Well, to talk about the classical Trojan horses in all these different countries, all they need to do is get the blessing of the mullah. This is according to their ideological. And what kind of culture would spawn something like this?
What's that?
The terrorists and the
terrorism. Okay. Because they think that the American lifestyle is decadent.
That's not why they did this.
They what?
That September 11th thing wasn't about a decadent lifestyle. Nobody's going to attack us for something that abstract. We have meddled with these people for so long that we've been calling it down on ourselves. If they had meddled with us the way we've meddled with them, eventually we may use their lifestyle as an excuse, but we'd go and we'd get them. I think that although I'm no admirer of Teddy Roosevelt, he said something that used to be an adage at the time. I thought it originated with him. It didn't. It was speak softly and carry a big stick.
Yes.
And the idea of the big stick, the idea of speaking softly, first of all, is you stay out of other people's business. George Washington in his farewell address warned against getting entangled with foreign countries. Do not make their problems our problems. We do that now. But the idea was speak softly. Be kindly to everybody, and if somebody does give you a problem, that's what the big stick is for.
And that doesn't mean to go out and police the world with your big stick.
No, it does not mean that at all. It means if you come into my yard, you better behave. If you're not behaving, I'm going to back drop you on the head. But I'm not going to go over to your yard with my stick and tell you how to live.
Well, John, when I mentioned the fomented by the internationalists, take, for example, when Iran went into Kuwait,
the Iraqis,
they were allowed to do that. We told them that was their business, was internal. This was after they came off a 10-year war with Iraq. They were poor in dollars, and what was happening was your oil had settled in at around $20 a barrel, up from 74 when it went from 4 to 40, remember that, back down to 20, it leveled off. There was Kuwaiti going out with its tankers into the oceans, and they were undercutting the agreed $18 minimum base and selling it for $14. And they were taking their oil from the same reservoir in South Iraq.
Yeah.
And they were. You see what I'm getting at?
John. And let me help you out here and get us moving on. You are right about the oil side of it, but I think John's point is that, and I think you use the right word, globalists. We have people who are, you call them internationalists. We use the form global plantation. There appears to be a corporate conglomerates that are working together in the financial side of things in the Western world to control the entire world as it were a plantation. And this is the activity of, it's colonialism, it's feudalism all over again, mercantilism, all the isms you can think of. But that's why they use the, do you ever read the book War is a Racket, John? By Spencer Butler? John Silvera. John in Florida, thanks for the call.
I've never read that.
Every Tom, Dick, and Harry's name is John.
I have never read that.
Smedley Butler was the head of the Marine Corps, General Smedley Butler. And in 1920s, he went to China for Rockefeller. He went down to South America. In fact, the Sandinistas, his troops were responsible for killing Sandina. And when he came back, he wrote this book that war was a racket. He and his Marines were nothing but mercenaries for these huge corporate types over in China and down in Central America. And that he proposed that from now on, if there's any war, that everybody be put on the same footing as a buck private. There were no huge paychecks for anybody until the war was over.
Well, you know, I have said, and it's one of the things in that series, I disagree with the military we have now. I do not want a professional military. I would like a Swiss type of military. I would like to see something that that everyone from about age of 17 to every man, about the age of 17 to 45, 55, I don't care, 60, has to serve in the military. You know, you go in, serve a few months of training every couple of years, go back for retraining for 2 or 3 weeks. Everyone keeps an arm in their house. I'll tell you what, how do you start a war? How do you go and meddle in someone else's business when you're telling guys who are 40 and 50, well, we're going to war and you're going, what? It's easy to get 18-year-olds to go off to Southeast Asia. But I'll tell you what, the Swiss don't fight wars because you can't get people, the average guy, to just go out and meddle in other people's affairs.
That's true, but we do have one problem, John. Unfortunately, our technology has outstripped the ability of the people to handle their own military. When you start having F-18s and aircraft carriers and the kind of things that we have now, it's too late.
Well, I would still like to see the American people say we need a citizen military.
I would love to see it, and I think we could man the reserve situation would work very well, but it would require a tremendous responsible citizens.
That's right.
All right, let's go. I think Alan dropped off. Is that correct, Alan dropped off? All right, we got somebody else from my chat room. Who's this?
Tom?
Yes.
Tom, it's Bring on the Clown. From the chat
room. Who is this?
Tom?
Yeah.
From the chat room?
Yeah, but you're not Tom from the chat room.
No, I'm not Tom. You're Tom.
Yeah, you are who?
Bring on the Clowns.
Oh, Brian, okay. Oh,
how are you?
Clowns. All right.
We never agreed politically, but it's very nice to speak with you.
Well, I'm glad you called.
I don't even know how to get you on the radio. Where is your radio station located?
All right. Right now, you're on shortwave. If you wish, you could hear me anywhere in the United States.
And how can I do that?
You can do it on the Internet or the shortwave. Shortwave radio, it's 5095
uh-huh.
or 6.890. And either one of those, you'll be able to pick it up on the shortwave. And if you want to hear it, this repeated. This show is repeated. And it's a 24 hours a day, 7 days a week streaming. All you do is go into AmericanFreePress.net.
Mm-hmm.
AmericanFreePress.net. And then follow the instructions to Radio Free America, and you can hear tonight's show starting tomorrow, providing Joe, my producer, doesn't forget to get it over there. So they will play it for a whole week, and then next week's show, they will replace this one, and you'll be able to hear it at any time during the week. So if you miss something, you can tell somebody, well, you can get on the Internet and hear the show.
Well, that's fantastic. So how long have you been doing this?
Well, this is my 14th year, young lady, but it's only...
My dear, I love you for calling me a young lady.
Well, I appreciate the call, Ring, and I was threatened by you guys today, and so you have kept your word. I appreciate
it. They threatened to do it. I just got on. I was just, oh, my goodness. Yeah, I'm so thrilled. I saw the number on. I just turned it on. I saw the number, and I said, I don't know what they're talking about. I'm going to dial the number, and here you are, and that's marvelous.
Well, you have just committed the cardinal sin in radio, but you're forgiven.
What is the cardinal sin?
Coming in, you don't know what we're talking about.
Well, let me tell you something. I've been committing cardinal sins all my life, so why should I stop now?
Atta girl. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Tom. Bye-bye.
Hi, my guest is John Silvera of Backwoods Home Magazine. He is a philosopher, if you will, and a political scientist, and just an average Joe who does a lot of thinking. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Valentine. This is Radio Free America. All right, it's the final leg, and we have finally reached it. John, time really flies, doesn't it?
It sure did. I didn't expect it to go by this fast.
You got that phone in your ear all this time.
Yeah.
We have Brian in New York. He's one of the more intelligent callers. He's a regular here. Hello, Brian.
Good evening, gentlemen. Benjamin Franklin, when they asked, what kind of government are you giving us, sir? He says, a republic if you can keep it. Those that will not read have no advantage over those who cannot read. Gentlemen, we're in a fight for a principle. As long as we please the God of heaven and his son, Jesus Christ, our efforts are not in vain. Mr. Zilla, you were talking about communism owning everything, sir?
Yeah, communism denies the existence of private property.
Well, you see, communism, the state owns and controls everything.
That's right.
Who controls the state? The bankers of New York and London.
Yeah, and in the end, it doesn't matter who controls the state if the American people, and I'm just talking about America, if the people won't stand up and do something, and they won't.
Well, I look at it like this. We have to try. You know, Mr. Valentine, you
wish we would.
Washington would take away people's water rights.
Yes.
Well, right now is a monopoly board. First, you take the currency and the waterworks and the electric company, the technology, and the land and the people. And the people can be taken because they contracted their rights with a Social Security number. You know, those people that make a pact with the devil have to sign a contract. So I guess hell was the first corporation.
You make a good point, John. And next week we're going to do. Next week I want you to be sure and listen and call in. We're going to be talking about money. My guest is a fellow out in California named Joe Phelps.
Thank you for taking my call.
I thank you for the call. Now, John, we have a couple of ladies who want to pick on me, and I don't think they're going to be part of our topic.
If it's ladies, I'm going to hide behind you.
Well, that's what we're going to let them come on because they're chat room ladies. We've got Kathy in Colorado and Sandy in Kentucky, and I'm bringing you on together, gals.
All right. All right. How you doing?
I'm doing just fine. Now, what is it you want to say?
Well, first, let's tell you who we are. This is Sandra. I'm Sally-da.
I know that. I recognize that right now, Sandy.
And I'm Kathy. I'm Little Vert.
All right. And you guys are in the chat room, and you wanted to pick on me because I said about my friend Galen Windsor eating plutonium.
Absolutely.
And he does.
Some thought.
He does.
Some thought, and we're going to throw a joint party, and we want the recipe.
I'm going to have Galen get in touch with you, and we will let him show you. He's 75 years old and healthy as a horse, and he's been around uranium and plutonium all his life. And, ladies, I really hate this, but I've only got a minute to go, and I got to spend it with my guest.
One last thing, Tom. It won't be the same without some irradiated soy crackers.
There you go. All right. We have a whole bunch of inside jokes from the chat room to end this thing. But, John Silvera, I think your series in the Backwoods Home magazine is really worth reading. And it's available on a CD from backwoodshome.com. And we'll have to do this again because we haven't covered it all.
Yeah, I want to appreciate you having me on. I feel like I wasn't a real good guest tonight.
You're an outstanding guest. In fact, you can go in to AmericanFreePress.net and listen next week and critique yourself if you're blue in the face.
But let me just, can I give a closing thing here?
Why don't you do that?
I just made some notes on the last thing. I want people to understand, and people who listen, I'm probably preaching to the choir, but the Constitution was written for us. And what people have got to understand is that your rights are real. They're not something that can be modified. Generally, they cannot be modified by the government. And you're going to lose your rights unless you know what they are. You defend them, and I'm telling people, read the Constitution. See what it actually says. I'm surprised how many people say they want their rights and don't know what's in the Constitution and don't understand where our rights come from. And I could go on with that, but it's not.
Well, actually, you and I are in the same boat. Individual responsibility is the most important thing.
That's all that will save us.
All right. John Silvera, thank you very much for your time tonight.
Okay, kid. You have a good night. Constitution was written for us. And what people have got to understand is that your rights are real. They're not something that can be modified. Generally, they cannot be modified by the government. And you're going to lose your rights unless you know what they are and you defend them. And I'm telling people, read the Constitution. See what it actually says. I'm surprised how many people say they want their rights and don't know what's in the Constitution and don't understand where our rights come from. But, and I could go on with that, but it's not.
Well, actually, you and I are in the same boat. Individual responsibility is the most important thing.
That's all that will save us.
All right. John Silvera, thank you very much for your time tonight.
Okay, kid. You have a good night.